Good morning. It is 8:16, and I have Melina Stevens, Snyderville Planning Commissioner, on the line to talk about the meeting last night. Good morning, Melina.
Good morning.
Thank you for joining us. So one major topic discussed was whether to amend Snyderville Code to do more to regulate accessory buildings like barns, sheds, that type of thing on residential lots.
The
consensus was that you do want to move forward and have a public hearing. What are you all thinking about this, and what are the issues around accessory buildings that have brought you to this point?
So over the last several years, we've had several applications for large accessory units in certain neighborhoods that have that neighbors have been upset about because of scale, because of size, because of place, because of the change in maybe the nature of the neighborhood and how historically buildings had been used and constructed. And looking at a lot of these areas, we're trying to determine, okay, well, we have these beautiful, pristine areas that people move to so they can have some open space. If everyone in those neighborhoods are allowed to build 9 accessory buildings on their property, then no longer is that neighborhood having the same character, the same value, the same kind of open vistas as previously. So it was just a work session. We're still working on it. No decisions have been made. And we ended it really that we will come forward with a public hearing. We want additional outreach to the neighborhoods that would be affected in the rural residential zone so that we can really understand, is it just a vocal minority that is in favor of limiting accessory buildings, or is this really the consensus of the overall neighborhood that they want to restrict the size and scale and number of accessory units so that we can preserve that piece of the neighborhood? And it has been done in other resort communities, and so we asked staff to get us some additional information on that as well.
Okay, and is this somewhat a response to, I think it was last year, a property owner built an indoor soccer facility or something along those lines?
That was one of the applications that led to this, but we've had several. It seems that anytime there's a larger accessory unit, that there's typically neighbors that show up that have something to say about that. And so we want to look at it more globally. Park City is changing very rapidly in some ways. We have a lot of development going on. So we want to make sure we're preserving the character of our area and that we're being proactive in that according to what the community is looking at, which is hence the public hearing and the outreach.
Sure. Okay. And then the rest of the agenda, the most controversy was on item number 3, the valve station for the water district. How did your group come to their decision on that? And maybe tell us a little bit about that decision.
Sorry, if you could repeat that. I'm having a hard time hearing you.
Oh, I'm sorry. The valve station for the water district, there was some controversy on that. And I'm just wondering how your group came to a decision on that and what the decision is.
So Mountain Regional is looking at taking over the service for water within the canyon. This has been something, from what we were told, that has been in the works for several years at various levels of conversation and work on the specifics of that. So Mountain Regional is looking to build a 345-square-foot water pressure relief valve station, which, from the information we were provided, is critical for water service within not only the Hidden Creek community, but also other areas of the canyons, and ensuring that water service is at the level that it needs to be. So with that, they had been working on this project for a long time. There was an easement that was signed in order to build this utility within part of the open space. It was signed by the HOA president and TCFC, who owns the land. And with that, our legal counsel indicated that was a legal easement. Mountain Regional Water has been very gracious in continuing conversations, even with the approval, continuing conversations with the neighbors so that if they can still come to some sort of alternative, there's that option. But with the application that was in front of us, it was legal, and there was no reason why we shouldn't be approving that, with the HOA having approved it as well as the owner, PCSC.
Okay, and can you give us a locator on where this station will be? You said Hidden Creek.
Yes, so it is on kind of on the edge of one of the parking lots. There's a little bit of a driveway that will go in. It'll be located within some trees, so it will be shielded. The neighbor's concern was that it was visible. There's a pond in that neighborhood that is highly valued, that it will be visible, I think the back of it, from the pond. And there was also some concerns of the precedent of constructing a structure within an open space area. With that, and we asked legal counsel extensively, because within the community, open space is very valued, as it should be. And apparently with different types of open space, there are different contingencies on that open space. And with how this was written with the easement, that this was the appropriate avenue in which to add that utility. And there's precedent within the canyons as well, that there's other open space preserved areas that have ski lifts or other utilities that are vital to the area.
Okay. And then there was an interesting amendment to allow for fencing to protect a lot in the colony from avalanches. Can you explain what that's all about?
Yes. So there was a property up in the canyons that, as the developer was developing the parcel, had some concerns regarding an avalanche area that could, at some point, if set off, run into the house, from what I understand. And so it was a safety concern. They worked with TCFC and avalanche experts and determined that, yes, indeed, it was a concern. So they fenced that area to prevent the avalanche from occurring. However, TCFC didn't want to have that on their property, as far as, from what I understand, maintenance and all of those sorts of things. So that's how this piece of the application came. So, in essence, the owner of the parcel that would have been affected by the avalanche purchased, I think it was 2 acres, or it was a small portion of TCFC's land, in order to then themselves be able to maintain that fencing for the avalanche.
How does a development
avalanche fence? Yeah.
How does a development get approved if they're in an avalanche path? I mean, would that not have been platted out earlier on?
I'm not sure if anyone was aware of that at the time. Once these areas have the entitlements in which to build, they typically, we have to find ways of mitigating that. And it sounds like, from what I understand, and I was not part of the body that entitled that property or had anything to do with it other than last night, but from what I understand, it was something that they discovered as they were building. It wasn't something that was discovered previously. And I don't know any more than that.
Okay. And the fencing will be paid for by the developer, not by the county.
So from what I understand, the fencing is already in place. It will be the maintenance of that fence in that area that will now be the property owner's, the individual property owner's responsibility.
Okay. Okay. Well, we will have to leave it there. Thank you, Melena Stevens, Snyderville Planning Commissioner, for that update on yesterday's planning meeting.
Thank you. Have a great day.
Bye. Thanks. You too. Well, good morning. You're listening to the KPCW Local News Hour. It is 8:26. In the studio, we have Diane Foster, who is the city manager with Park City, Clint McAfee, Public Utilities Director, and John Wiedenhammer, Economic Development Manager. Thank you for joining us. Busy.
Good morning. And Caroline, if you wouldn't mind, I just wanted to give Jonathan a moment to talk about the school district master plan. We've got Dr. Gilday coming to City Council tomorrow, and I believe one of the school board members. And it's just a time where I think, with school starting, and there's been a lot of work done, and so we're going to be getting an update. And I think a lot of folks in town may be really interested in coming tomorrow. So I'll let Jonathan just give you a quick highlight, if that's okay.
Yeah, that'd be great. Thanks.
Yeah, sure.
Jonathan.
We just wanted to honor, to the degree that we've worked with at the school and admired their public process that they've entered into, and many people from the community and City Hall have participated in that. And as school starts, like Diane said, we wanted to help keep some momentum going behind it. It's been a great process. And excuse me, I think Dr. Gilday will just give an overview of the process, where they've been, and some of the preliminary recommendations and next steps as they see it.
Okay, and I imagine that transportation has been somewhat of a conversation throughout the whole thing.
Absolutely. Transportation was one of the major considerations in isolated kind of task force areas that they studied, and preliminary recommendations took that into consideration.
Okay, and the Master Planning Committee, they probably haven't been meeting over the summer, but they did do a lot of work last spring.
Correct. I was part of that process, and it was very, very thorough, and we've taken the summer off, but with that, you know, whatever, an 8-week break, we thought it would be a good time to help them, again, get the engine cranked back up again as school starts here pretty soon.
Yeah, launch it up. Okay, so let's talk a little bit then, moving on to the agenda, the electric bike use on our trails. Where are e-bikes currently permitted in Park City?
So currently they're permitted on paved surfaces. They're not permitted on soft surface trails. And so this is a community discussion. You know, this is evolving. There are many communities around the West, and Trails and Open Space and Property Manager Heinrich Dieters has been talking to communities like Boulder, Colorado, who are also looking at the space. The state legislature has also a couple times talked about coming in and just deciding how they want to regulate it. So we believe, and many legislators are very supportive, including our local legislators, of local control. And so this is a start of a discussion. And so staff right now is not recommending a particular action other than directing staff to conduct a statistically significant and in-depth survey with the community to find out what folks are interested in, because historically, and I think, you know, we've seen a lot lately in the media and some discussions around courtesy on trails, which is something that I think we all support, including partners like Mountain Trails Foundation. And but there has been a sentiment of maybe the trails are too crowded right now. And so adding e-bikes, would that add a population? And I think, you know, folks always worry about the, are we going to invite folks from outside the community other than our visitors to get on the trail and basically have an influx from Salt Lake of e-bike users who may not be familiar with some of the terrain around here. So the discussion will start on the doing the survey. And then we'll also look at doing things like, would council want to investigate allowing people with disabilities to be on the trails? So, for example, there are all kinds of regulations about what we can and cannot ask. And so specifically, possibly looking at something like if someone has a hang tag, would they get some type of identifying symbol on their e-bike so they could be on natural surface trails? Another consideration, a thing that other communities have looked at, is there an age at which people should be allowed to use e-bikes on a soft surface trail? And these are all great questions, and this is just the start of the discussion with the community. I think folks will be interested in it. And depending on what we see from survey results, Heinrich also wants to talk with the city council about the possibility of taking a test trail or two. Maybe we take a couple of the easier trails in Round Valley and look at that. And I think we can look to the model of dogs in Round Valley. I believe that was going to be a disaster, and it's been a huge success. And folks are self-regulating on that, and Round Valley is still a great place to be, still a place, great place to run and bike and have your dogs off leash.
Yeah, so has the conversation, I mean, has it been a situation where staff and council are hearing from groups that represent disabled riders or senior riders? I mean, has this been actual comment that's been brought to council?
Very much so. And right, the council is representatives of the community. That's where their issues, right, our community critical priorities come from there, because people in the community went to council members, went to staff and said, we think this is important. And this has very much been a discussion that people with different abilities have come to the council. I had a conversation with a coffee shop with a person who has severe asthma and can't ride a mountain, you know, loves to mountain bike, but isn't going to be able to access certain trails with that disability. And so I think we've heard a lot from a lot of different members of the community. We've even had public input from a gentleman in our community, I believe he was about 85 at the time, who talked about just not physically being able to tackle the same trails and wanting to have access to that as well.
Sure. Okay. So how will you proceed then? What happens next?
So the specific request of council is Heinrich's going to be talking about all of that breadth of issues on this topic, and then based on that, be able to craft a survey for the community. And we do want, because it will be expenditure of funds, we do want specific city council direction on going ahead to do a survey. You know, depending on what the survey says, and we'll bring that back to council, and depending on what they hear from the community, there is a possibility of doing some pilot projects next year.
Okay. Jonathan, let's talk a little bit about you're part of this team along with the senior transportation planner Alexis Verson and special events manager Jenny Dearson, and you're looking at traffic and circulation in Old Town, and it's being put out to the public. You're holding meetings, you're discussing this. What's your role in it, and what is the biggest challenge, do you think, with the Old Town access and circulation?
I think the biggest challenge is really about squeezing the balloon, so to speak. I mean, this is really, it's hard about balancing the livability of Old Town in our residential districts and the impacts that come from the growth of the tourism economy. You know, the traffic and congestion can be impactful. You know, 30 years ago when we started to redevelop the resorts, we did some things along Parkett Avenue to make it more livable, like the Box of Rocks down by the 7-Eleven or the stop sign on, you know, at the bottom of Parkett Heber Avenue, things to try to protect and insulate residents from the impacts of the traffic. And a couple of years ago, we really had that bubble kind of poking up on Hillside Avenue. And we had a lot of input from residents, and we've taken some measures over the years. But, you know, perhaps we haven't gone quite far enough and fast enough to help mitigate some of those efforts. And council's been a bit frustrated. And as you go through that conversation, if you just start to take drastic efforts on one part of town, sometimes, again, that balloon or bubble squeezes up somewhere else. And so what we don't want to do is take intrusive measures in the short term. What we're recommending, the big picture, is do a comprehensive kind of Old Town access improvement, circulation, parking study, so that we know where all those people are coming from, where they're going, where they need to be, and then let's figure out what next steps or measures are to find that correct balance. My role as the economic development director has really been, I was involved the first time around from a walkability standpoint when we decided to not build Hillside really big. The transportation director, Alfred's been really focused on transit. Alexis is fairly new, and so we wanted to have someone who's done projects in and around Old Town team up with someone who is kind of new to the city, who has a degree in transportation planning and has a good idea of how to run a big study like this. We wanted to partner together to, get some stuff done in the short term, but B, keep our eyes on the big picture.
Yeah, and so there are small changes implemented here where you're making some changes for 4th Street and 5th Street to make them one way.
Some
circulation going there.
Let's do small things. I think one of the biggest area of consensus that we've found is that we're leaking a lot of commercial traffic out of Old Town and into the residential districts. You know, people that are just kind of lost or following the Google machine or not sure where they're going, and they end up kind of wandering around and turning left at Grappa from Sweet Alley or kind of up Hillside to try to find parking again. And we think there's a huge area of improvement to better sign and keep those people in the downtown. I think the biggest challenge is ultimately going to be, I had the answer just a second ago. I think, you know, it's not different than 248 to a degree. We made some decisions in 2009 to build a smaller street on Hillside instead of a street against the recommendations of public safety and the city engineer. You know, we knew that there were going to be 35% to 40% more trips generated from the Empire Pass development.
Yeah.
And the public safety folks were very firm in recommending we build a wide street there. And I think trying to understand how those trips move around town and again, the future livability of the residential districts, finding a balance there is going to be a big challenge.
Yeah. So, you know, I totally get the idea that you don't want to have visitor traffic, tourist traffic in your neighborhoods. But I mean, what can you do? I mean, where do you start? Where do you end with saying, oh, you know, public road is closed to certain kinds of traffic? I mean, is that very feasible?
Well, what we don't have the ability to do is distinguish between type of traffic. So we can't just hang a sign that says no commercial traffic. But what we can do is we can build the street to the width and the, you know, the specifics that we want. So we build it to be about 20 feet wide. And that creates some natural friction and tension. But even more importantly, we can decide when and how traffic can access that street. So whether it's no left turn on that street before 3 p.m. or one way only after 5 p.m., there's a number of measures we could do that would really put a hindrance on the amount of commercial vehicles that do use it. But at the same time, there's not that many ways in and out of the downtown. And, you know, there's always a balance.
Yeah. Okay. Let's move on. Clint, there are a lot of public utility items on the agenda, I guess, tomorrow, and that talk about authorizing service contracts and funding requests. Can you give us a rundown of what we're looking at with this?
Yeah. So most of these items are attributable to our need to address water draining from the Judge and Spiro mine tunnels. So we've been working on this for 5 or 7 years, both from the permitting side and then the planning side on how to address the water draining from these two tunnels. And so that planning and that design work is now translating into infrastructure projects. So we're starting to transition into, you know, design contracts to construction contracts. So we have two items related to the actual treatment plant. The first one is kind of a boring topic. It's the funding to select some of the bigger equipment that's going to go into the treatment plant. So this treatment plant is a large building that has a lot of complicated and expensive equipment. And so the way we procure that equipment is important to make sure we get the most cost-effective but also reliable piece of equipment. So that's the first item. The second item related to that plant is the off-site utilities between the tunnels and where the treatment plant will be constructed. So in order to build this treatment plant, we have to remove the existing Spiro water treatment plant, which was built in the 90s to address a very specific need, you know, meet drinking water supply and treat certain contaminants out of the Spiro tunnel. Our regulatory need now is completely different from that. But all the water coming out of the Spiro tunnel runs through that plant in a pipe. And so we have to connect to that pipe and bypass the entire Spiro tunnel around the site before we can begin construction on that water treatment plant. So that's the second item related to that facility. There's also two contracts related to the upgrade of Quinn's water treatment plant out on Richardson Flat Road. And those contracts are related to a couple things. Mostly, though, increasing the reliability and capacity of that water treatment plant so we can ensure water supply is being delivered during the reconstruction of the Spiro water treatment plant. The other item on that facility is to build a water system interconnect where we'll lay a pipeline from the Quinn's water treatment plant eastbound near the movie studio where we'll connect to a line owned by Weber Basin. And starting May 1st of next year, we'll actually be delivering surplus water from Park City to Weber Basin through that pipeline and selling it to Weber Basin, which they in turn will sell to Summit Water.
Okay. What are we looking at spending on all of this, all of these water infrastructure?
The 5-year CIP is public, and it adds the portion related to this work is close to $100 million.
Okay. Significant amount of money.
Yes.
Okay.
It is, and I do think it's important to for everyone to know about the work that Clint and his team have done. The city council, when, you know, this community believes in water quality, and the Three Kings Water Treatment Plant is being constructed specifically to address water quality, stream water quality, which is something this community believes in, but is also something that the state was regulating us on. And there was no question about we had to do this. And a prior city council agreed to what's called a stipulated compliance order to make this happen. the city council was very concerned about the cost, and so Clint and his team went back to the state, and they worked a lot and negotiated the price down. So I think we're probably about $20 million less than we were going to be, which is stunning. And the state was actually quite supportive of it, but this is a big project. Clint's been very upfront and very straightforward, as has the city council, with what these costs are. And if people have questions, we do encourage them to reach out to Clint and his team and, you know, ask questions. This is a big project. It's going to be pretty visible, but it's going to be doing the right thing for our environment.
Okay. We're going to have to wrap it up. I've got, let's see, the meeting is starting tomorrow at what time?
Tomorrow at...
Four.
And thanks for that, Caroline. The Old Town circulation discussion is 4:30. The school district is kind of the first portion of the regular meeting, probably happen about 6:15.
Okay, great. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank
That's
you.
Diane Foster, City Manager, Clint McAfee, Public Utilities Director, and Jonathan Wiedenhammer, Economic Development Manager. Thanks, everyone.
Thank you.
Good morning. It's 8:44. Derek Sitaway is with the Summit County Health Department, and he is here to talk about harvest time, I think. Thanks for coming.
Thank you. That's right. Good morning. We've got our farmers market coming up. This will be the third annual one that the health department has hosted with some of our community partners. The first one is next week on Tuesday, August 20th, and that will be held at the Intermountain Park City Hospital. So we moved venues to there last year. It was really great. There's lots of space, plenty of room for everybody to bring their produce, and we're excited with all the produce that will be available and some of the other services we're offering.
So will you just hold it in the front of the hospital area or in the parking lot, or what? How will that be set up?
So the hospital is gracious to host us, and they block off the southern part of their parking lot. So we have kind of three sections there that we have plenty of room for vendors. We'll also have car seat checks there, so parents can bring their car seats. And there's a nice pull-around area with plenty of room for everyone to get around.
Okay, now there's a unique element to our Summit County market with respect to the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, SNAP. Can you tell us a little bit about that, please?
That's correct. So we're the only farmers market in Summit County that accepts SNAP EBT cards, and we also have a great program where we can give recipients, basically it's called the Double Food Dollars program. So if they spend up to $20, they'll get an additional $20 in produce as well. And that's been a focus since we started the market, is being able to provide fresh produce to those families and individuals who are on the SNAP program.
So basically they would buy $20 worth of groceries, they'd get vegetables from the market, and then they'd get an additional $20 worth of vegetables.
That's correct, yes.
Okay. And where is all of the growing? Where does the growing happen?
So we have several different vendors that we work with, some from here in the county and some from out of the county. All are pretty local. I think Taggy's Fruits from Logan is about the farthest away that anybody comes. So the produce really is fresh, and most of it is grown locally here in Summit County with several different vendors that we have.
Okay, great. And so the time frames are the three next weekend or three next Tuesdays. Is that right?
That's August 20th? Correct. The three next Tuesdays, 12 to 4 p.m. That's August 20th, the 27th, and September 3rd.
Okay. And people should come and let you all check out car seat safety, that kind of thing. And then I also see here that there's some notes about nutrition and gardening education. Is that also going to be part of the market? Will there be booths set up for that? Or
that's correct. So in addition to the fresh produce and the traditional things that you would find at a farmer's market, we have the car seat checks that I mentioned. Intermountain Park City Hospital is providing free health screenings to individuals that come. We have the Bookmobile, the Summit County Bookmobile will be there on all three dates, so you can check out books from our great library system. And then we'll also have nutrition and gardening education from Utah State University Extension Office. And they'll have people there throughout the day sampling some recipes, giving people advice on what they can grow in the area and the best ways to grow that. So there's a lot of opportunities to not only get fresh produce, but learn how to grow it and learn how to prepare some of that produce as well.
So, and getting back to the SNAP card holders, How many people come and participate in that who are eligible for the nutritional assistance?
So the numbers vary on that from market to market. That's been a focus since we've started, is reaching out to more of those individuals, and we always feel that we can improve what we're doing to let more of the individuals that take advantage of that program know that we have the market. So we don't have any specific numbers, but it's been a goal of ours over the past 3 years to let more people in that program know about it so that they can take advantage of it.
Okay. So just to recap, August 20th, first day of school, also out at the IHC Hospital in Park City, and then the 27th, and then September 3rd.
Yep, right after Labor Day. And that's it. Yeah. 900 Round Valley Drive at the Park City Hospital.
Okay, all 12 to 4.
That's correct.
Okay, thank you. That's Derek Sitaway. He was in with the Summit County Health Department to tell us about the farmer's market. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Well, my next guests are coming from the cast and production of Barefoot in the Park. We have Richard Bug, who's playing Victor Velasco. Siri Ivers is playing Corey Bratter. And Clarence Gilliard is the director. Welcome. Thank you for joining us this morning. Appreciate you coming by.
Thanks for having us.
Good morning. Good morning.
Yes, so the play starts tonight at the Egyptian. Is that right?
At 8 o'clock.
Okay. And you're Clarence?
I am.
Hi, Clarence.
Good morning.
So, tell us a little bit about your involvement with the play and how many times you've done this performance.
That's very kind. I'm going to speak very short because I want Corey to speak as much as possible. Anyway, I'm the director. I've been with the festival, which is 17 years old. For 8 years, Mr. Bug, the founder over there, hired me 8 years ago to do Driving Miss Daisy, and I've been acting and directing in it. And my family has enjoyed our time in Utah because I teach at UNLV as a theater and film director. So,
okay.
But the play,
great, yes, the play,
super, yeah, this play is super. You know, Robert Redford started it, started in it in 1963, and then went on to do the film in 67. And I have an affinity for Mr. Simon and his canon. I've done 7, maybe 8 Neil Simon plays since I've been with the festival. And I really wanted to do this because when I signed with my agent back in, I'm not even going
to
say how old I am.
I
did an audition in her office, and I played Paul to a classmate's Corey to get signed to start my career.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, this will be great. And it's Corey Ivers?
Siri.
Siri.
Yeah, like
okay.
iPhone. That's it.
Okay. That's great. Your parents must have had some premonitions or something.
Right.
And you're playing Corey Bratter.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Okay. Tell us about your background and what has brought you to this role.
So I have been acting in Cedar City quite a bit. I actually went to Southern Utah University, took some classes from Rick and Peter Sham, who's also affiliated with the festival. So they kind of connected with them, which brought me here to play Corey. And it's just been, it's been a blast. It's been so much fun. This is such a great play, and it's just so much fun to do every night. It's fun to get to tour it here to Park City, which I'm excited about.
Mm-hmm. And where do you go after Park City, if anywhere?
Yeah, so after Park City, we have kind of a two-week break, and then we're going to actually take the play out to Hunterdon Hills Playhouse, which is a theater out in New Jersey, which will be really fun. We're like an hour outside of New York City. I've never really spent much time over there, so that will be exciting.
Oh, yeah. Okay, great. And is the whole cast and production going? It's on the road, basically.
Yeah, that's right. Yep.
Okay, great, great. Well, and then what happens after that? Do you continue to tour, or
great.
Are you coming home? Or what?
That's a really great question. Yeah, I'm not really sure. That's kind of part of what the excitement of theater is. You kind of, you take one contract, and then you audition while you're doing one play for the next gig, and you try and line things up that way.
This production, however, will come to an end after New Jersey.
So. Okay, and have you done Neil Simon plays before?
This is my first Neil Simon play. I usually do Shakespeare and musicals, so I've never done Neil Simon. It's so specific. I mean, the specificity and the comedy and the timing, it's really been so much fun to work on.
Yeah, well, great.
She's picked it up well, though.
Yes, and Richard Bug playing Victor Velasco.
Yes.
And tell us about your background, please.
Well, I started this festival, as Clarence said, 17 years ago, because I also have an affinity for Neil Simon's work, and I wanted to honor his and try to preserve his plays. And so the chance, this is actually the third time we've done the show over those years, and I've directed it the first two times, but now I get a chance to be in it and play this delightful character. He's a real eccentric. And I'm actually his age. It's fun to actually play someone my exact age. He's the upstairs neighbor who, he's 58 years old, and he skis and... Lives in the attic. and just takes life as it comes. And he loves good food and pretty women. And he meets Corey's mother, and that becomes a love interest. So... it's just a blast, and with such a wonderful cast, we're just having a great time together.
Oh, excellent, excellent. Anything else you want to say?
You know what's interesting is we were on the morning show yesterday, and I am very honored to helm this production, but we had the whole cast on the morning show, and I was watching them through the window, through the glass door, and this is a fun play because they are. Of true, you know, symbiotic cast. They enjoy each other and they get the play, and they're not afraid of, the rigor of what you have to do to make Neil Simon funny. But even in and around that, they were laughing so hard that you guys overshadow the interviewer just in having your own fun. And I realize that that's going to be something that the audiences here in Park City are going to be able to enjoy. Yeah. They're going to have a good night. They're going to have a fun night.
That Egyptian theater venue is just so intimate and such a beautiful spot. Yeah.
We always.
I hope you come see it. The set is really fun, and it's right. You know, it's right in your lap, and the humor is right in your lap.
So, what does it take in terms of timing to put something like this together? I mean, how long have you all been working together?
And well, we rehearsed for about a 3.5 week period, something like that.
Yeah.
And of course, we're mounting two other shows at the same time, and three others really. and then we took it down to Kayenta, the art center in Kayenta, and ran a week there. And now we're here, and then off to New Jersey.
You know, I'm 63, so I've been in the business 40 years.
See, I didn't have to say it.
I know, and I came up through sitcom and television, and so I was rigored very hard by sitcom writers. And there's no room for real deviation from what's in the text, from adding an ooh and a ah and a well and a, and then you have to have, you know, a gift. You have to have a gift for understanding what may be funny, and then you have to be intrepid about putting it out there, and then you can't be afraid when somebody weighs in and says, maybe this is the operative word here, right? This is the word that's going to make it funny. And then you have to pick up your cues so much in his plays because they're so dense, right? The fabric is really, the fabric is there. But the density of the comedy and the relationships, they mean you've got to keep driving through and let the audience do their work rather than you trying to lay something on top of it.
Well, an iconic playwright, for sure.
Without a doubt.
Yeah.
Well. Interesting man, but yeah, his plays are definitely iconic, I think. That's one of the great things about Rick starting the company and preserving. So we just have to stick with it and keep fleshing them out. As I'm sure if he was, God rest his soul, if he was still here and still viable, he would be rewriting.
Okay. Well, we're going to have to leave it there. Okay. Can you give us a rundown just real quickly of times and days that it's running at the Egyptian?
We run tonight through Sunday night. It's at 8 o'clock through Saturday, and then I believe the Sunday performance is at 6.
Mm-hmm. Go a little early.
So
okay.
Please come see Sari Sue
at the Egyptian.
She is beautiful, and she's funny, and she carries the whole show on her shoulders. It's great to have her.
Okay. Yeah. Well, thank you very much, Clarence Gilliard, director, Sari Ivers playing Corey Bratter, and Clarence Gilliard, Richard Bratter.
We're switching.
No, we look alike.
Well, sounds like you've done all of it anyway.
Yes, that's right.
Thank you for joining us.
Thank you.